Hello and welcome to The Dugout. Glad that you've managed to make it here. We've actually just finished recording a podcast episode today, which was looking at the French in the early part of 1918. And a part of that, Spence, we were actually talking about a part of the battlefields that you and I are going to be going to, albeit through a different lens in June of this year. And we thought now might be a good time, particularly with only about a week left to go before applications to come along and join us on a battlefield tour are closing. But now might be a good time to give it one last push, let you know what we're going to be doing over that week in early June, and see if you want to come along and join us. Because, I mean, let's be fair, Spence, battlefields, great location, good beer, great company. Can't really go too wrong, can you?
You can't. And the final missing element that looks good for this tour is the weather. I was looking at the longer range weather forecast, always a bit shaky. But first week of June in France, and particularly the part of France we're going to be touring around, is meant to be absolutely beautiful weather. So bring your hats, bring your sunscreen if you're coming. And you'll definitely want to refresh your whistle with a good glass of beer, wine, or a soft drink, depending on what your tastes are. But interesting, Dan, that you connect it to the episode we just recorded, which was about the French in 1918, because it's interesting that the French fight so ferociously in 1918, but in some ways their story, certainly the English-speaking world, is a little bit overshadowed by the arrival of the American Expeditionary Force, and a huge pivotal moment in the First World War, pivotal moment in American history. And really, that's what our tour is about. So we're going to be following in the footsteps of the American Expeditionary Force, covering its key battles, really, on the Western Front, which are often battles that, certainly for a British audience, often a bit overlooked. They're not obvious to reach. You've got to go south of the Somme to really find these. But I think they're tremendously rewarding battlefields to visit, and relatively untouched in many places too, Dan.
Yeah, there's some great stuff. So just to give you guys, I know some of you already listening to this are already coming along to join us. We've got a great group already coming. We do have some spaces available, I should say. So the tour itself is going to run for six days, between Tuesday the 3rd and Sunday the 8th of June. It's going to start and finish in Paris, which actually, what's great about it is as soon as we get onto the ground, you're immediately going to be into the history as well. So in Paris itself, we're going to go and visit a couple of spots before we even get onto the battlefields proper. So the very first day, we're going to go to the really impressive Lafayette Escadrille, which was actually created by local subscription from the French and also from former members of the Escadrille. Really huge, imposing memorial right in the center of Paris, which has since been taken on by the ABMC, the American Battle Monuments Commission. So they look after that site now. We're also going to go to Suresnes American Cemetery, which is, again, right in the heart of Paris. You can literally stand in the cemetery and see the Eiffel Tower. I was there last summer with some friends. It's a spectacular area and some incredible stories in there. But as soon as we do that and we finish at Paris, we're going to head down and our first location, Spence, I think you and I have been there before together, down to Chateau Thierry, right on the banks of the River Marne. It's a really imposing town, beautiful place, and of course, just teeming with history too.
It really is. I'd also add it's really hilly, because the last time that we were there, Dan, you might recall we went out for an evening drink in the town. And then walking back to our hotel, we were marching up what felt like a 90-degree incline.
Do you remember that, actually? Yeah, nice. That was
good fun. Yeah. And it just went on and on and on and on as well. Amazing we actually made it. Imagine slugging up that with a rifle and a pack. But, of course, this is Chateau Thierry, absolutely a key part, really, that the starting part, perhaps, for the story of the American Expeditionary Force. Yes, American servicemen are involved in other actions. As an American engineer unit ends up fighting at Cambrai, for example. But this is where we're going to start our tour. And the big battlefield we'll be looking at on day two is one of my absolute favorites, which is Belleau Wood. And Belleau Wood, so intimately bound up in the story of the US Marines. It's a battlefield that has not changed that much either. And you can trace really the contours of the battlefield really well, because it's not an entrenched battlefield. So sometimes you go to battlefields and you have to try and imagine the dense trench positions. And Belleau Wood isn't like that. It's almost a battle from the American Civil War or the Napoleonic Wars. And that makes it a really, really evocative place to visit. And you can, you know, stand in effectively the position where 4th US Marine Brigade was and look out towards the woods and sort of get a feel for it. It's a really rewarding battlefield to visit and to walk on that sense. It's one of my absolute favorites. But it's not just about Belleau Wood either. It's also a chance for us to look at the Rock of the Marne position where 3rd US Division fought with both its flanks turned being forced into a horseshoe position at the Second Battle of the Marne, and really, really intense fighting, again, in comparatively open country, so you can get a great feel of it when you're actually on the ground. Battle with maneuvers in it as well. And, of course, 3rd US Division earned that nickname, Rock of the Marne, on that. And it's a very evocative battlefield to visit and get a sense about why this works. So two of my absolute favorites, which I'm really looking forward to visiting, and I will brave the 90-degree climb out of Chiatti-Otteri if that's required. And talking about, you know, interesting and sort of evocative things and things that perhaps connect to us as individual battlefield guides. Day three, Dan, this is definitely your bag, or perhaps be more precise, it's your tunnel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I should say, one of the things that I know from doing loads of tours like this with you, Spence, you know, one of the things we love to do is the stuff that you can't normally do. So find access to, you know, a part of a battlefield that normally the general public wouldn't go and see, walk across a certain part of the battlefield, or in some cases, descend beneath the battlefield. And I'm very lucky to work with a number of tunneling organizations, which gives us access to some really unique locations. One of which is a tunnel which is actually occupied by doughboys in 1918. Not open to the public, can't be seen on a usual day, and we're going to be going underground to go and explore locations just like that, still filled with graffiti from 105, 110 years ago. In some cases, you know, still got rifles propped against the wall and cigarette packets still on shelves, and, you know, it's like somebody just blew out the candle and closed the door. So, you know, that underground day along the Chemin de Dam on the Western Front, with, of course, some above ground work as well, is going to be extremely rewarding. And so day three, which is going to give us a chance to look at the story of tunnelers, including tunnelers of the AEF, is going to be really remarkable. So more detail about that one as we get closer to the date. But if that's your cup of tea, and bear in mind, not everybody has to do it. If tunneling's not for you, or you're not good in small spaces, there are other above ground options as well. So it's, you know, these things are designed so that everybody can get involved as much or as little as they like. But day four, Spence, we're moving to the other side of the Verdun salient to perhaps, at least as far as the American story goes, one of the crucial areas of the whole story of the AEF.
That's absolutely right. The St. Mihiel salient, which is the first battlefield where the AEF is going to fight as one. Rather than fighting under French command as individual American divisions, now the entire AEF under John Pershing's gathered together, and it's going to be launching an offensive against a troublesome salient that has troubled the French really since 1914. And the Americans first act as unified armies to try and pinch this salient out. Sometimes called the St. Mihiel salient offensive, sometimes called the St. Mihiel drive. This is a really fascinating 1918 battle, because it's essentially a battle of maneuver. Mixture of American artillery, infantry, tanks, aircraft involved in this. America's first big industrial 20th century battle. And it's a fascinating one, because there's a lot to see here. There's a real mixture of challenges the doughboys have to overcome. I'm thinking of tunnels. They have to overcome because the terrain changes a little bit, moving through villages, through fixed defenses. The Germans are entrenched here. Moving through woodland, through fields, maintaining that advance. And this is a battlefield that sometimes can be a little bit complicated to really get your head around, because there's different sides to it. It's quite a big battlefield, quite a lot of maneuver. But it really captures something about a 1918 battle, where you have this mixture of the modern clashing against the older trench warfare of 1915, 16, and 17. And it's a hard-fought battle, but it's also ultimately a great American victory that, certainly within living memory of the St. Mihiel offensive up until the Second World War, it's really clung on to as a key moment for the American military. It's a great victory. They've driven the Germans from a fixed position. And on day four, we're going to be looking at, well, how do they actually do it? What are the nuts and bolts? What are the different terrain they encounter, and so forth? And that leads us on to, I suppose, would I call it the biggie? Certainly the biggest offensive for the Americans. And that's on day five. We're going to be heading to the Meuse-Argonne down.
Yeah, we're going to be actually shifting kind of in the footsteps of the AEF, because they actually start moving from St. Mihiel before the battle ends, and start shifting westwards back to the other side of the Verdun area in order to take part in the St. Mihiel salient. In order to take part in the Meuse-Argonne offensive. I was thinking St. Mihiel because actually, as you were talking, I was thinking one of the places we're going to visit is something called the Forêt d'Apremont, which is one of the best preserved sections of trenches anywhere on the entire Western Front. Just incredible. So that's going to be a real plus for anyone coming in to join us. But of course, day five is going to be the story of the Mersar gone. Those three tram lines moving northwards, bounded by the Verdun to the east and the Argonne Forest to the west, which allows us to really cover perhaps two of the most famous stories as far as the doughboys in the First World War go. That's going to be, of course, the Lost Battalion, Major Whittlesey and his actions in the Argonne Forest itself, and also the actions of a certain Alvin York, who is going to be on the edge of that same forest, a little bit further to the north, with his famous Medal of Honor action. Not only have we got that, but we're also going to be climbing up to the heights of Montfaucon, and anybody with the stomach for it can scale the several hundred steps up to the top of the memorial and look out in the direction that the Americans advanced during that attack. So I'm really looking forward to that particular day. That's going to be it's going to be a real strong one. And we're actually going to stay in the same sector for the final day, Spence, because we're going to finish at perhaps one of the most stunning cemeteries and memorials on the entire Western Front.
We are, and that's the Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery, which is absolutely spectacular. And I know, listeners, lots of you have visited the Western Front. Lots of you have commented about the power of cemeteries and this power of memorials. But if you've not been to Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery, it is breathtaking. And I compare it to Tyne Cot in scale and in its beauty and in its emotional effect as well. And we have to remember at Meuse-Argonne Cemetery, it's about 60% smaller than it should be, or than it would normally be, because uniquely the Americans offered repatriation for fallen soldiers, and about 60% of their fallen soldiers were repatriated back to the United States. But even so, vast cemetery, absolutely stunning, and a perfect place to really end the story of the AAF on the Western Front. And definitely it should be on anybody's bucket list of Western Front sites to visit. But because it is a little bit out of the way, especially for British visitors, not a place that is visited perhaps as much as it should be by those surveying the Western Front. But we'll be taking you there to finish the story of the Meuse-Argonne battle, and also just to pay tribute, of course, to the thousands of doughboys who gave their lives in 1918.
Yeah, it's going to be a really powerful spot. And I think to finish off the tour as a whole, to be able to move up to a little village called Chaumont-d'Envilliers, which is not too far away. And we'll go to a name that a lot of people know, but the site that very few people visit. And that's the location where the last Allied soldier of the entire First World War is killed in action on the Western Front. And that's a man with the unenviable title and the name of Henry Gunther, who probably dies about 10:59 and 50-something seconds on the 11th of November 1918. We'll go to the spot and we'll retell really quite a tragic action, actually, which bookends the end of the fighting on the Western Front. So that's all going to go ahead in our final day before we head back to Paris and we call our tour to an end. It's going to be super exciting. I know we've already got a load of you guys already listening to this right now are coming along to join us. We've got a few spaces left, so if you do want to, now is the time to think. Tickets are only available for the next week or so. So if you do want to come along and join us, now is a great time to do it. We'd love to sit down in the evenings, have a chat with you guys, and hopefully build a great community so we can keep doing tours like this in the future. Who knows where we'll pick next year? I've got a few secret thoughts in my mind, and I'm sure you do, Spence. But first of all, really hoping to have a great time, and thanks for all your support, whether you're coming to join us or not. But really, really exciting, Spence. What do you say? We'll get the first beer in for anybody that comes along and joins us on the tour.
Okay, Dan, but you're buying, and that means you can't lose your wallet again, which you've got a bit of reputation for on tour.
Fair point. Yeah.
And just to reiterate, listeners, we know we're going to see a lot of you already. There's still a few spaces left. It does close on the 14th of April, so not a lot of time that from when we were recording this, 10 days. So do move fast if you'd like to come. It's going to be fantastic. We hope to see you there. We're looking forward, if you've already booked, to seeing you. And if you haven't, have a look at what we're offering, because I think it's going to be absolutely terrific. And as I say, the weather's going to be great, which is not something you can always guarantee in France. So looking forward to seeing lots of you there, and it's going to be so much fun.
Very true. We'll post the links and all the details and that kind of thing right here on the dugout. So it'll either be above or below this post, but you'll be able to find it. And hopefully come along and join us soon. All the best. See you again soon.